This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar with Philip C. In half an hour, we have the breakfast grill. Tell us, is it going to be coloring within the lines or outside of the lines today, Phil?
Because you're asking me this really interesting question, simply because Keith Kam will be speaking to Andrew Woon, Managing Director at Faber Castor Malaysia for Indochina and East Asia as well. As you know, it's a 160-year-old stationery maker, and they've had a significant presence in Malaysia, manufacturing erasers, ballpoint pens, among others. So how did this company weather the pandemic, and when such products such as its, you know, pens and stationery colors and coloring pencils were all affected due to the closure of schools, colleges, universities and offices? So Andrew Woon basically talks to us about how the company is navigating these new challenges in this digital age while becoming more sustainable.
All right, stay tuned to that conversation on The Breakfast Grill after the 8 a.m. news bulletin, all about stationery. We are turning our attention now, though, to what's going on in the UK. Last week, the UK government presented its spring budget amidst strikes happening around the nation that have been disrupting schools and travel. In a wide-ranging speech, UK Finance Minister, also known as Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, announced a slew of tax and spending pledges for the next 5 years, targeting the labour market, pensions, childcare, defence and business investment as the government seeks to address the country's sluggish economic growth prospects.
Additionally, the Independent Office for Budget Responsibility is now forecasting that the UK economy would not enter a technical recession in 2023, as was previously anticipated. Inflation now is predicted to fall from 10.7% in the final quarter of 2022 to just 2.9% by the end of 2023. So can the budget deliver the growth that Chancellor Jeremy Hunt promised for the UK economy?
For key takeaways of the UK budget, we speak to Craig Earlham, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda. Good morning, Craig. Thanks very much for joining us. What does the spring budget tell us about the priorities of the UK government in their quest to drive economic growth?
I think they tell us that the biggest priority is providing more supply for the workforce and trying to grow the economy, but at the same time trying to help on the inflation side, which is ultimately the biggest growth driver for the economy going forward. If interest rates are high, the economy is going to struggle to grow. So the best thing that the UK government could do in this budget is to try and increase the supply for the workforce. And they've tried to address that with two things: with enticing older workers back into the labour force in the 50 to 65 age bracket, and then also getting working parents back into work. And one of the biggest demotivational factors in that area, and that's people with young children, is the fact that childcare is so incredibly expensive. And they've tried to address that both with trying to increase supply of childcare places, and also through trying to subsidise that childcare cost. And I think that's a really important initiative. Now, it's unfortunate that because of the way that that will happen, it's going to take a couple of years for that fully to come into effect. But I think that's going to be the biggest and most important factor from this budget for the longer term in terms of driving that workforce, which will ultimately benefit both in terms of inflation and interest rates and wages in the economy.
So, Craig, who are the winners and losers of this budget?
The biggest winners of the budget for me is young families. It's people who have massive childcare costs, who are deterred from returning to work because the cost of childcare is so much that there just isn't an incentive to return to work until they are three. They're the biggest winners, I think, from the budget. In terms of losers, I don't think there necessarily is a big loser from this budget. This budget was about growth. This budget was about trying to help the supply side of the working economy, and trying to therefore alleviate pressure so that the economy is able to grow over the medium term. So I don't think necessarily was a big loser from this budget, because a lot of the cutting measures in the budget actually came in the autumn statement. So I think the biggest winners are young working families, and of course then those aged 50 to 65 with the incentives on the pension side. I think they were big winners because of the taxable benefits with lifting the thresholds. I think that's a big win as well.
Does the budget address any of the labour issues that have been the subject of ongoing worker strikes in the UK? And what kind of impact have strikes had on markets and the broader economy?
The budget does have an effect on labour in terms of labour supply. Not so much on the strikes. The strikes are a different thing altogether. Over the medium term, it could potentially have an impact on workers' desire to strike. And the reason why is because if this is one of the things, and the bulk of the issue here is going to be driven by energy prices, food prices, and interest rates over the short term. But if over the longer term, it means that we do see higher worker supply and we therefore see lower inflation and lower interest rates, then we will see this have a beneficial impact on that front. And therefore, people won't feel the need to strike. People won't feel the need to demand higher wages if inflation isn't at 10%. So that should have a beneficial impact. But that's more over the medium term. Over the short term, the most beneficial thing that we can see from a strikes perspective is for the two sides to come closer together towards an agreement, which is something that, for example, we've seen with the NHS. This isn't a budget issue. This is a negotiation issue.
Now, the government said that the UK would avoid a technical recession this year. And while the economy is still expected to contract by 0.2%, this is much less than the previous forecast of 1.4%. What's the basis for the more optimistic outlook? What are the headwinds that could derail this projection then?
The biggest influence on the economy has been the weather, ultimately, over the course of the winter. If we'd have seen more unfavourable weather conditions, which means people needing to use their heating more, that would have led to higher demand for energy and higher energy prices. And also in Europe in particular, where we've seen great effort to increase levels of stores for natural gas in particular, if they would have been dwindled down over the course of the winter, then that would have also led to higher gas prices as well. So that's been one factor, which is where we've been quite fortunate. And that has enabled us to have lower inflation over the course of this year and therefore stronger growth. Another thing has been China, and we can't ignore that fact. Had China not been battling its zero COVID policy over the last year, meaning lockdowns and therefore lower usage, they'd have created additional demand for energy and other commodities, which would have driven up the prices for the rest of the world as well. So again, that's another area where the UK, but not just the UK, Europe as well, has been quite fortunate in terms of the circumstances, which has enabled them to avoid a recession this year, potentially grow and hopefully see lower inflation.
All right, let's turn our attention to central banks then. What's the direction of the Bank of England monetary policy in light of recent moves made by the ECB, as well as the present turmoil that we're currently seeing in the banking sector?
So I think there's a big unknown on interest rates. Markets are trying to position based on what we've seen over the course of the last week, but I don't expect this will be the final position. I think if things calm down and we don't see another Credit Suisse situation and we don't see another SVB situation, I think we will see interest rate expectations being raised. But at this point in time, markets are determining a coin flip for another 25 basis points for the Bank of England. And then that's it. That's the peak. And then we could see rate cuts later on in the year. Like I said, this is a dramatic shift from three rate hikes and no rate cuts, which is what we were seeing priced into the markets a little over a week ago. So I expect expectations will shift quite a lot over the course of the next 2 weeks, either as the situation in the banking sector settles down or we see further turmoil, which could again affect whether we're going to see more turbulence in the markets, whether we're going to see more issues, whether we're going to see worse economic forecasts on the back of that because of the disruption in the banking system, whether they're going to see more intervention from the Treasury and from central banks. This will have a big impact as well on interest rate expectations if that does materialise. If it doesn't materialise, then I expect them to gravitate back towards where they were, not necessarily as high as they were prior to all of this, but maybe somewhere in the middle because inflation is still a problem. But central banks simply can't ignore the fact that financial stability risks that we've seen over the last week have been at least in part driven by the sharp increase in interest rates.
What have been the spillover effects on UK markets coming from the SVB banking meltdown and Credit Suisse crisis? I mean, are there concerns of a contagion that will affect UK financial institutions then?
The biggest effect we've seen so far is, to be honest, been on share prices. Obviously, it's always difficult to know until it comes to light where the vulnerabilities are within the financial system. We saw that obviously back in 2008. There was institutions which appeared safe and appeared in good position and didn't turn out to be so. So it's going to take time to determine if there are any other vulnerabilities and where they lie and how how important they are and how systemic they will be. And then obviously then central banks and the regulatory authorities will determine what the correct response to that is going to be. One thing we've got to remember is these banks, especially the large banks, are much better capitalized than they were back in 2008. And especially in Europe, the regulatory regime and the stress testing, etc., covered much smaller banks than what we saw, for example, in the US, which is why what we saw happen with SVB is less likely to happen in Europe, or at least that's how it appears at this stage because of all the efforts that have been made over the course of the last 15 years. So until we know more, it's going to be very difficult. But at this point in time, it doesn't look as though we're going to see major contagion because of the efforts that have been made, for example, by the Federal Reserve in order to shore up liquidity in the markets and create the backstop for depositors, larger depositors than was previously the case. These efforts should help to sustain the system. But again, until you actually see where these vulnerabilities lie, there's an old Warren Buffett saying, which I think is very prevalent right now, which is until the tide goes out, you don't see who's swimming naked. And at the moment, we're not seeing who's swimming naked. We found out last weekend that SVB and that Silvergate were among those, and we may see more. But at this point in time, it's very difficult to understand where those are.
Craig, thanks very much for speaking to us. That was Craig Erlam, Senior Market Analyst with Owanda, giving us the takeaways from UK's spring budget, as well as some commentary there on the spillover effect of the US banking crisis on other parts of the world.
Reminding us to wear swimming shorts.
Indeed. Yes, let's do that, especially if you're swimming in the ocean, yeah? 7:46 in the morning, we're heading into some messages. And when we come back, we're going to discuss policy measures to strengthen the protection of children in Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.